Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. Okay, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to today's show. I'm really excited about this one because I'm with one of my favorite people in the world, London Souza. London, you're going to learn a little bit about her. I'm going to let her tell you all about her. It's the first time you all have met her on the show, but the conversation we're going to have today is something London and I talk about all the time when we're sitting at home just chilling. We begin to have conversations in the realm of exactly what we're going to talk about today, which is really about change, but more particularly about the idea of how we humans live out of what I would call seed stories. And what a seed story is it's a story that we formulate about the world at a very young age that essentially germinates all of our other ideas and affects how we then show up in the world. Now, the truth of the matter is, London is an expert in many things that I am not, which is why I wanted her to be on the show, and I wanted to learn from her, and I wanted you to learn from her. For example, she is really well versed in something called NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, which I don't know a whole lot about. She'll tell us a little bit about, but my understanding of it, it's the way that we speak about the world oftentimes determines a lot about our behaviors, and we can uncover a lot about our behaviors in the language that we use, and we also can affect our behaviors by the language that we use. And this is pertinent to this conversation because we can understand a little bit about people's seed stories by the way that they talk. And also, when we are dealing with seed stories and trying to rewrite these stories, we can't always change the environment that we're in and the people that we are around. And so the way we speak to those people and communicate to them is also something we have to be aware of. And London is also very, very well versed in that. So I'm going to let you, London, introduce yourself. I will say this to everybody: London and I have very similar backgrounds in that we both started in fitness, and then we both got more and more and more into mindset, psychology, and life coaching as we've gone through our trajectory and our careers. And this is why this conversation is really, really important, because I think we both believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, London, if I'm speaking for you, but we both believe mindset sort of rules everything. You cannot go anywhere in life if you cannot get the mindset right. And so that's why we're having this conversation today around behavior change, around seed stories, around traumas, around the idea of how we change and how our thoughts and our behaviors and our feelings and our choices and our actions have to change in response. So I'm going to let you start wherever you want to start. I would really like you to just give them an idea of how you got started in this work and sort of how you got here and where you began.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro. My name's London Souza. I'm a life coach and NLP practitioner. And yeah, like you said, I got started in fitness. When I moved from my hometown to go to college, I started personal training myself and other clients, and just really loved fitness for the way that it made me feel. It was a great way for me to cope with stress, and yeah, just loved it. Loved what it did for me, loved the connection I had with my clients. But what I realized, you know, pretty quickly was I was using fitness as like an end-all, be-all tool for everything. And I often say it's kind of like, you know, when you try to build everything with a hammer, or you even use, like, I don't know, the end of a flashlight to be a hammer, right? When you're like nailing something to the wall, where it was just my tool for everything. If I was happy, I was going to work out. If I was stressed, I was going to work out. If I was trying to process something, work out. And I just realized that I was just being fulfilled by more workouts, more doing. And, you know, I mean, it was a long process and a long journey, but I just realized, yeah, there is that other component of mindset. It really goes hand in hand with fitness. And, you know, you can't always fix the inside by working on the outside. And while it's a great tool, there are a lot of other tools. And so I just started going on this quest for, yeah, mindset tools is really what it was. It was just kind of like that personal development space. It was delving into more of thinking about what I'm thinking about, change your words, change your world, being able to create the perception that I wanted based on words and mindset, in addition to having fitness as a tool. And so I found it so beneficial in my life and and in my lives, in the lives of the clients that I was working with. And I just found that communicate, like, it's great that we are working out, right? It's great that we have fit bodies. It's great that we, you know, maybe found the perfect program that gave us tight abs and a lifted butt and like the body, the physical body that we want. But then it's like, what are we going to do with that? And what is the bigger contribution that we're going to make? And so I started asking myself these questions. I started realizing a lot of the ways that I was holding myself back with mindset, with the word choices that I was using, with a lot of these seed stories and some of these repeat things that I found myself in this loop. Sometimes continue to find myself in loops because we're always doing this work here. And so, yeah, I really found it so helpful and so beneficial. And especially in this mindset space, neuro-linguistic programming was something that really, really helped me as I was just diving deeper into life coaching myself and to others. Certain things come up and I just really found that using my perception as my superpower instead of my prison was really the direction that I wanted to go. And NLP was a method that I got introduced to by Aubrey Pohl, who is my mentor, and I got certified in it, and then I got recertified in it, and I just found it to be such a powerful tool because when we look at neuro-linguistic programming, okay, as the word, neuro-linguistic programming, neuro, our brain, linguistic, the words that we use, and the programming, right? We have a programming. Whether we want to admit it or not, we all have some sort of programming that, like you said, could have developed from things early on, interactions we've had in the world, all of this. And we're already thinking about something. We already have something on repeat. And so for me, NLP has been a tool for myself and for my clients to help us rewrite the story, to help us really see, okay, we are already, for a fitness reference, putting in the reps, saying these things, repeating these stories, being in these loops over and over and over again, getting this result. How about we try putting in the reps over here and see if we can get a more empowering result, something that's more in alignment with how you want to show up. And so, yeah, NLP has been super powerful. And then just also, like you said, just being aware of how we show up in the world. And I think it's great that we can get in our workouts. Fitness is awesome. It's an amazing tool. It helps me break through a lot of barriers. And I feel like it's not the end all be all tool. And maybe somebody listening here is like I was too, where it's just like happy workout, stressed workout, don't want to face a situation workout, do more, you know, more, just more physical doing and less introspection. And so that was me. And so this has just been kind of a fun journey. And that just happens to be the modality that I love, neuro-linguistic programming. And I know we want to talk a little bit about some cool tools there. And yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So before we dive deep into this, I want to actually share something that I know about you that I find telling about this work that you do and this work I do that I want to share with people. So London is very humble, but one of the things you should know about her is that she did fitness at a very high level with one of the biggest fitness companies, I guess we would say, in the world. So she spent 6-7 years in Austria, correct me if I get this story wrong, working for a company that eventually sold to Adidas. This is someone who built this company from the ground up. And this is what I find important here. Like me, London has done thousands and thousands of workouts with thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And what I want to drive home here is that when you have this many reps in fitness, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know this from other conversations that we've had. And I just think this is where we should start this conversation. When you have that many workouts and you see some people have success, But you also get insight into lots and lots of people spinning their wheels. So they're doing all these things. They're working out like crazy, yet they don't seem to be getting the physical results. And the question is why, right? Now, the next place we normally go is, okay, then it's got to be diet. Well, just like working out with people in the gym, I've seen thousands of people and worked with tens of thousands of people on diet. And that also, most of the time, doesn't seem to make the change. And so one of the things that happened to me, which I think happened to you, is to realize after all these reps, after all these people working out with them and working with diet, etc., you finally get to this place where you go, something else must be happening underneath all of this, which is why people can't stay on the diets, why the exercise doesn't work. And I think we both arrived at the idea that this is a psychology that is going on here. It's not just about doing more, working out longer, working out harder, eating more of the right foods. This is the dominant conversation in the health and fitness world. However, most people like you and me who've got tens of thousands of reps with people in workouts and diets come to this place of mindset. And I find that telling, and I find all of you listening to this, it's just something I wanted to point out to you, because if you look very closely at people who have the most reps in fitness and in nutrition, you'll find that most of them eventually find their way into the realm of mindset. And that is no accident, because this is where the big differences are made, I think. So I just want to get your thoughts on that. Do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? Because one of the things that I feel like you and I have in common is that we basically sometimes talk about this idea of, like, we can be compassionate with it and empathetic both with ourselves and others, but we oftentimes go, okay, they're just not there yet, is a phrase that we often use, which essentially just means they don't realize yet that what's driving the frustration and what's driving the need to diet and exercise and the obsessiveness around that is really the psychological aspect of things and the stories that they are telling that they do not know that they are telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree there in the sense that, you know, it used to frustrate me too, to your point of when you have reps and reps, you're like, there's something else. It used to frustrate me because it's like no one comes. And I mean, you know, now it's different because I've been doing this for a while. Maybe this topic is a little bit sexier, but like no one came, you know, these thousands of people that were coming to these workouts and whatever. It's like no one comes and asks for mindset work. People are like, you know, I want the workout. Which workout burns the most calories? You know, which workout is the best? How can I shape this, 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 or this? But like I said, you get to a point where, you know, what you look like can really only go so far. And I remember having a conversation one time. I was in Scotland on this journey trip and we did all these amazing hikes. And I was talking to one of the girls on the trip and I was just, yeah, it was right after leaving Adidas Runtastic and just kind of sharing that. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to write blog postings about workouts that burn X amount of calories to this. And I just feel like people are asking, you know, I was almost kind of like asking a lot of the wrong questions, you know? And I was just talking with her and we're hiking and she's like, yeah, it just seems like, you know, people are really looking to fix that outer muffin top, but really what they need is help with the inner muffin top. And I was like, yeah. So I always use that with when I think about it. It's like sometimes we do try to go after something that just somehow seems like the right thing to go after, but really, you know, the inner muffin top is like is the better one to go after. And so now it's cool because I think when we continue to show up and like we've evolved as coaches and I, you know, sometimes you and I will talk about this, like people love the fitness workout stuff. Like when we post the mindset stuff, like it's just less engagement, a little like whatever, but I just feel like that's really the important stuff. And now that I've been doing it long enough, it's like I do have people who come to me. They're like, yeah, I want to work on my mindset, like my communication, my leadership skills. I want to be a better partner. Like a lot of the stuff where I'm like, yes, okay, this is the stuff I love to work at. But for a while, and yeah, that was, you know, where I was supposed to start. And that was where my journey was supposed to be. And I was supposed to go through that fitness experience and the extremes. I often say too, like, I don't know if I would know my, when it comes to fitness, when it comes to a lot of things, if I would know my balance, if I hadn't been at those extremes. Yeah. And so I appreciate them sometimes too.
Yeah. It's like you, as a coach, you kind of have to go through some of the things that people, you know, are going through. And eventually I think all people get to the mindset stuff, but let's jump into the inner muffin top stuff. And let me tell you my hypothesis about why people don't want to talk about this stuff first. It's because it is so varied and so different. There is not, in my mind, a recipe book for the mindset stuff to make. Now, you know, people think, right, they'll go buy a book like The Compound Effect or High Performance, but you know, and all these different books. But the truth is, when you're sitting in front of somebody, these stories that they're telling are varied. They are nuanced. They are, you know, deep and sort of cryptic at times. And so it is one of these things that you have to first become aware of these stories. That is not always fun because there's a lot of emotions that we attach to things. Things like guilt, things like shame, things like anger. A lot of these emotions that come up when we start talking about stories are not things that we humans really want to sit in. We want to kind of avoid that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we go to diet and exercise, because it is a good distraction technique from a lot of this sort of inner work. But the way I want to phrase it to the listeners, and this is a more of a question for you, I suppose, is that if there is a story underneath that is causing you to feel a particular way, let's say unworthy, not attractive, not smart, you know, less than, or whatever that is. Now, imagine this. Imagine there's a story there underneath that you're not necessarily aware of that is causing these emotions that you also are not necessarily allowing yourself to feel, but they are there. And then you go and work out and do all the things. But when you look in the mirror and when you go to the kitchen, you are making choices. You're not seeing someone who is looking good when you look in the mirror or you feel good about yourself, because no matter what you look like on the outside, if you don't feel that on the inside and your emotional state is different, you can't square that. Likewise, food is something that oftentimes we use as a drug to suppress some of these feelings. So now you can imagine, you're like, I'm working out. I'm, no matter how good I look or how strong I'm getting, I still don't like the way I look in the mirror. It doesn't matter how many people tell you, you look so good. If you have these feelings underneath from a story that you're telling yourself, you are not going to ever look in the mirror and be happy with yourself. So you just keep working out. Likewise, you're oftentimes using food as a drug to soothe the same emotions. And from my perspective, this isn't everyone, by the way, but if you're listening to this right now, you're probably nodding your head if you're one of these people and being like, yes, I can relate to this. And so from my perspective, that is the group that we're talking about in this particular podcast. And first, I want to just see if you want to add anything to that story about, doesn't matter how much you work out, how good you look, if you look in the mirror and you have these deep-seated emotions from a seed story that you've been telling yourself unconsciously, you're never going to think you look good. And likewise, if you have these emotions that you're trying to soothe with the drug of food, you may never make the changes you need to make in the first place. So that, to me, just is the reason why this is so important. Because if we can get to the bottom of that, then you can actually see yourself in the mirror as looking good, feeling good, being worthy, and also not using food as a drug to soothe some of these emotions.
Yes, snaps to a lot of that. I think to your point, some of the fittest people that I've even, you know, known, some of the shredded, most buff, fittest people in the world can sometimes have the harshest inner dialogue and can be the most unsatisfied, unhappy, not always, but I just think, you know, maybe someone listening is thinking, okay, once I get that body or that, then I'm going to feel this way. And I think you and I have probably engaged with a lot of people whose physiques are phenomenal and look fantastic, but, you know, have underlying issues and self-talk, you know, things and mindset struggles. And one time I wrote an article and I did a podcast on it too, on my podcast, called like The New Clean Eating, which was cleaning up your self-talk and looking at your, you know, your self-talk plan. You know, we meal prep, we get all these things organized, like you said, workout plan, meal plan. We don't want to deal with this stuff. We'll just do this to a T, this perfect. But sometimes when we look at, yeah, the way we've been talking to ourselves and speaking to ourselves. It's sometimes worse than we would speak to like our worst enemy or things like that. So I think that's something that's totally worth being mentioned. I think what we consume, to your point too, nutrition and a lot of that can be a coping strategy. And I often say what we consume is not even just nutrition, but it's also media and other things like that that contribute to stories that we might tell and ways that we might feel. Nutrition is a huge one, and it's really important. And I think, you know, without delving too much into nutrition specifically, I just think that the awareness of coping mechanisms, whether it's, you know, masking like I was with lots of working out and regimens and, you know, or a coping mechanism for somebody else might be nutrition. And it's a journey to go on, and it's your own journey to go on, and it's your own rabbit holes to navigate. And I think sometimes too, we can get caught up in just like, just tell me what to do. Tell me what's the right workout plan. Tell me what's the right meal plan, and I'll just follow it perfectly to avoid dealing with all the underlying everythings, and we can kind of just move forward there. So I think that's something really important to touch on too, is that it can be a bonding thing. We can bond with people through food. It can be just something. There's just a lot of things I think are on autopilot, right? It could be the nutrition thing. It could just be coping mechanisms that are on autopilot, ways that we've always done things. And I think what's really helped in this mindset piece and with NLP, you know, no matter what someone listening is struggling with, what their coping mechanism might be, if they're overworking out like I always was, or if they feel like, you know, food has just got a hold of them and this store, like there's so many, I think one thing, or a lot of things actually, but in NLP, and something I know crosses over to what you do too, is being able to chunk up to core values, and you say honor code of like who you want to be, how you want to show up, what is like the highest version of yourself, doing, being, embodying, all of that, and then being able to chunk down into specific moments in times and specific moments and situations that we're struggling with these core values, with this big picture, and then be like, okay, in day-to-day life, as I'm becoming more of who I want to be and engaging with more people in this, I don't know, in this new way that I want to be, a new way that I want to show up, how can, you know, as I'm doing this, you know, we're making mistakes, we're going through the process, and having NLP to be able to chunk up and define these core values, and then also chunk down into specific moments in time when it's like, okay, could I have shown up better? How could I, you know, be a little bit more in alignment with who I say I want to be? What can I learn from situations where I did a great job and situations where I could have done way, you know, a lot better? And as we're on this journey of awareness and discovering our coping mechanisms and all the things, it's like we still have to get to word choice, London. We still get to go throughout every day of our life, right? Every interaction, moment by moment, day by day, learning more, having more awareness of what we might be struggling with, what seed stories we're trying to break and rewrite. But like still we need to go throughout our day-to-day processes. And I think that's what I love the most about not even just processes, but just like interactions in day-to-day life. And that's what I love most about life coaching and NLP is kind of like, okay, who do you want to be? How do you want to show up? And then like, we're in the arena, like as Brene Brown says, like we're going in, and then, you know, and then we have tools and strategies to say like, okay, how can I grow from this? How can I learn more from this? And that's where I feel like NLP, nonviolent communication, and a lot of the tools that you and I talk about regularly have been helpful. Cause it's like, yeah, you can go for a run, but that's not going to help, you know, the conversation that needs to be had, or the boundary that needs to be set, or the, like I said, conversation or communication that needs to be had. So I love tools when it comes to mindset that have to do with words, the way we talk to ourselves, the way we talk to others, because that's what's happening every day, day in and day out. Right.
So let's give them now, let's get like sort of into the nitty gritty of what this looks like with people. So, and maybe we could do it with me, but how would this work if you're dealing with me and my stories and the things that I want to change? So I guess we'll start with someone. Obviously, if you're listening to this right now, you know, most people start with, I want to look different, feel different, be different in some way. I want my life to look different. This is normally how we start, right? So what would be then the process of unpacking that? From my perspective, I want to know from you, do you start with, you know, someone's underlying stories, or do you just start with this idea of how they're showing up in the world now versus how they want to be showing up, and do the techniques start there? So tell me, and you can walk me through it if you want, but let's walk through where we start this process.
Cool. So usually, I mean, I don't know, when people come to me and start telling stories, they're telling like specific stories about situations they've encountered, moments where they've experienced frustrations or problems or maybe setbacks in their lives. Very rarely do people, I mean, I shouldn't say very rarely, but do people come up with these big chunked up, like, I want to be more this. It's just like, I'm struggling with this. You know, I keep finding that in my teams, you know, I'm struggling with this coworker or conversations with my partner or like specific situations. And so where I like to start is just helping people understand that their perception is malleable and that there's a lot of tools that help us gain more wisdom, not just from where we might sit in that particular situation. And so I love that because usually, I don't know, it's kind of like thinking you're going to go to therapy and like fix all your situations in one session. It's like when people come in, it's like they tell these very specific stories, things that have made an impact, moments that even things that might be on repeat. And so I like to start with the things that are happening regularly, the little battles that are, you know, happening day to day. And so I'll often ask people, you know, what's a specific situation you want to gain more wisdom on? You want some more empowering learnings from? Because oftentimes we're stuck in these loops of like, this is frustrating. It's a nowhere, no end, running up against the wall and hitting ourselves in the head. It's like, okay, let's figure out what's happening. Let's take a snapshot moment in time and let's gain some wisdom from that particular moment, because that one probably, you know, is copy paste into other parts of your, you know, week, day, year, whatever. And let's figure out kind of where we sit in that particular situation and let's gain wisdom from other places. And so that's one of my favorite tools to use. It's called perceptual positioning, and it enables us to see kind of where we might be and where we can gain more wisdom. So there's different parts, positions that you could be in. So position one would be our own position. It would be our own experience, and being in position one is concerned with our own needs and, you know, our own to-dos and our own expectations and all those different things. And then we have the second position, which is like others oriented and being in the position of others. And, you know, that can be really awesome. And it can also be, you know, staying in any of them, I would say, can be great. And then also some disempowering too, right? If you're always in first position, always in I, me, my needs, this is how it made me feel. Okay. You know, that can suck. And not be empowering and not be helpful in relationships and communication and things like that. And then in second position, being others oriented, that can be awesome, right? We want to be looking out for one another and helping each other. But if we're only worried about that and we're only like being, you know, this can be a coping strategy too, right? Where we just are always focused on the needs of others to avoid our own, you know, our own pain and the things we need to heal within ourselves. And then the third position is kind of like the higher point of view, the God's eye view, the bird's eye view. And this can be helpful to kind of gain some wisdom from the situation, just kind of from more of a dissociated perspective. But you can see if you stayed there for too long, you'd be completely dissociated, right? From your own feelings, from the feelings of others. So it's important to note that too, that all these positions have a great perspective and it's helpful to shift and it's helpful to use some tools. So I'll often have clients just pick a moment in time, like a specific moment where it's just felt like, yeah, they were struggling with it. And I'll have them go into their own body and process what they might be feeling and what they can learn from their valid perspective, and then go into the body of the other person that might have been involved in that conversation, in that challenge, in that meeting, in that situation. And go into their perspective and what can be learned and what can be understood and what can be, empowering and valuable to kind of take in, and bringing that wisdom to you too. And then being able to go above the situation and just be a little bit detached and be like, okay, what's happening here? What's the bigger picture? What's being communicated? What's not being communicated? And then have, you know, people bring that back down into their body too. And it's just great to even see in these sessions some of the shifts where people, it's just like, we're so quick to point the finger at everything that might be causing it and it's their fault and it's this situation, that even just sitting down and taking the moment to be like, What did I think about this situation? What can I gain from the other person's perspective, and taking the time to even put myself in their perspective for a moment? You know, sometimes we're just kind of like all spastic, worried about the situation and the problems. And then also from that third perspective, being able to, you know, see and pull in even more there too. Sorry, I don't know if I lost my train of thought a little bit.
Yeah, but, no, this is perfect. And actually I have...
go ahead, interject.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so... let me just repeat back to you, and I'll actually give the listeners an example of myself, and then you can just kind of interject and let us know if I'm on the right track here or not. So I'll just remind all of us. So like one of the things we're talking about, at least from my perspective, that I want to uncover is this idea of a seed story, right? So, and how this impacts us later on in life. So for example, my older brother mercilessly teased me when I was a child, to the point where, looking back now, it was borderline abusive, you know, from my perspective, right? From my, you know, so this would be my first person sort of point of view, like you said. This would be the first place I come at it. Now, why am I telling this story? Because from my perspective, this created in me some worthiness issues, some anger issues, some reactive stress issues, which any of you who follow my metabolism work know that if you are have excess reactions to stress, more stress, cortisol, this can cause issues. But it permeated into other patterns. This permeated into relationships with friends, relationships with women, and it impacted my life. It also impacted my need to work out incessantly, look good, be strong, right? There was a lot that this particular situation sort of caused in me. Now, some of this may have been good, some of it may have been bad, but let's just start there. So I could go back, let's say, to any of these events from my childhood, or even the way I interacted with my brother in my 20s. Now, I got over this in my 20s, and I think I did something similar to what you're saying, but we'll see. So if I want to break through some of these patterns, let's say, now some of you at home, it might be a pattern with your significant other. It might be a pattern with a coworker. And some of these patterns with my significant others and my coworkers go back to my teasing from my brother. And one of the things that I did to get over that is I said, okay, from my perspective and my perception, this was abusive, right? This was painful. But when I looked at it from my brother's perspective and tried to say, okay, forget about how you feel about what happened, what was going on for my brother? And when I put myself in my brother's perspective in this situation, my brother is someone who loves to laugh. He is someone who does everything he can to entertain himself. And he often entertains himself with other people. You know, so from his perspective, he was getting a kick out of me. Right. He was playing with me, like this was his way of playing with me. And I showed up because of the way I was, as it was teasing to me. It was playing and connection for my brother. And so this was the first realization that I had. If I put myself in his point of view and just looked honestly, not my perspective, but looked how he was with everyone, I saw him do this with a lot of people, and not everybody reacted to him the way I reacted to him. As a matter of fact, a lot of people laughed right along with him and they had fun. I was miserable in the situation. He was doing the same thing to someone else and they were having fun together. Then I could take a step back for the third perspective in this situation and go, what did it teach me? Right. And what did I have to learn from this? Well, it taught me things like maybe I needed better boundaries. Maybe I needed to be less serious. Maybe I needed to enjoy myself more. Maybe I needed to share more. Right. In other words, there was something to learn there. Now, whether any of that is true or not, I can tell you, once I took these different perspectives, one of the first things that I realized, and this was in my mid-20s, I realized this. I realized all of a sudden in a flash, I was like, I'm treating my brother, who's 27 and I'm 24, I'm treating him as if he's a 12-year-old picking on an 8-year-old, right? Still. And this all the way into my 20s. And then I had to see in my anger towards other people and my inability to have anyone say, give me any feedback at all, had to do with this being teased by my brother, or the perception of being teased. And so that then changed my whole world, because then I realized that I could just as easily see my brother as my best friend who's just wanting to have a good time with me. And I began to do that. Now, I have, you know, other things to say here about, because it doesn't always work this way, because he could have really been an asshole, right? And maybe I was just wrong. So maybe my initial perception was correct. But how would I have ever known if I didn't stop and go, maybe the way you're seeing the world isn't the accurate way of seeing the world. And so Keone has a way. My brother had a way of seeing the world. I had a way of seeing the world. And then I could go up into God's point of view and go, what's the purpose of this anyway? Or at least, how could I use this situation? And I can tell you that that changed everything. Fitness now didn't become a way to be stronger and better than and competitive with other people. As soon as I made that realization, not only did I get along better with my brother, I got along better with everyone else. I started learning more from other people, and my fitness endeavors became more about me and competition with Jade than competition with others. And this permeated into personal relationships, into romance, into the way I learned, school. I just became a better person all the way around. And sometimes I wonder whether I was accurate in fixing my perception or not, like whether my initial perception was right and I really was the victim and being abused. Holding on to that mindset and that story wouldn't have served me anyway. So I certainly did a better job for myself by taking this other perspective that I could be friends with my brother and that he just wanted to connect and have fun with me. And I also could use that as fuel to get better for me, not fuel to be better than him or other people. And so, is this sort of the power of this? Does this illustrate this, or is there something I'm missing here?
No, it's good. And I love that you brought a family example too. We can talk about that. But, you know, we have enough snapshots and moments in time that for one reason or another, you know, compounding effect lead to this particular belief. Like you said, you found yourself treating your brother the same, as if the same action was happening over and over and over again. And in all these opportunities where we get to shift perception and all the things, what's common? We're in it. We're the common denominator. We're in each situation that we're involved in that said outcome is coming from. And so that's why I love the perceptual positioning exercises. And to your point, you're like, I had all these issues with this and this and this. And what my mentor says, which I love, she's always like, if you got an issue, issue. And I love it, because it's like, it's true. It's like, we can complain and blame, and you can sit in the seat of, you know, my brother bullied me my whole life and did this, and you could continue to do that. Or you can choose to say, hey, I'm the common denominator. I'm just going to choose how I react. I'm going to choose to shift the meaning. He's just having fun. He's just playing around with me, whatever. And when we do this work, and I'm happy that you brought up a family example, because this is always close to my heart too, is like, when we do this work, oftentimes a lot of our seed stories and different things involve our family and involve different things that may have happened. And then it's like, but we still hang out with our families. I mean, maybe not everybody, but it's like, we talked about this earlier. It's like, you're going through all this, you're uncovering some of these seed stories, you're feeling through it, you're working out through it, whatever. And then it's like, you still see your family on Easter, mm-hmm. or you go and meet up with them. And so that's why I love nonviolent communication. And maybe you want to talk about that too. I think that's really cool, because it's like, in the trenches of unraveling, unbraiding, unlearning seed stories, in the midst of it, it's like we're still engaging on a regular basis. And oftentimes it does have to do with family. So I think that a combination of nonviolent communication, mental rehearsal, which is so powerful in who we want to become and how we want to show up big picture, but also so helpful in terms of like, okay, next time you're around your brother and he's making a joke or something, you know, choosing and preparing ahead of time, no, I'm going to see it as funny, or I'm going to see it as he's just playing with me, or I'm going to choose that, hey, the person I want to be needs to set a boundary here. So how am I going to do that in a way that's congruent with who I want to be, that's not, you know, complaining and blaming, that there's a ton of ownership and I can communicate that clearly, because that's important too. And that's something that I've, you know, struggled with. I just, like I say, dance with too now, because sometimes I just laugh at myself. Sometimes I share stories with you of ways that I'm just trying to bring better communication, better boundaries, better yeah, just better showing up and more congruent with who I want to be into these family interactions, into the arena where a lot of these seed stories were created. And that can be really sticky and uncomfortable and messy. So I think it's worth, saying here in this moment, like wherever you are in this journey, like kudos to you, because this is not easy. It's not for the, you know, it's not for you, right? If you're not ready for it, like, you know, you have to, we talked about this, you have to crave it, you have to want it.
It's really powerful.
It's so powerful.
It's really powerful stuff. Let me interrupt the show just for a few minutes because I want to tell you about one of our sponsors, Evolve Telemed. One of the questions I get all of the time, one of the services that you are asking me for constantly is hormone replacement therapy. Women going through menopause, women going through perimenopause, women in postmenopause, women under stressful situations who are dealing with low sex hormone levels, estrogen and progesterone, are constantly asking me about progesterone therapy or estrogen and progesterone therapy. And men, same thing, constantly asking me about testosterone replacement therapy. Plenty of you, many of you always asking, Jade, can you prescribe me hormones? I need testosterone if you're a man, or I need estrogen and progesterone or testosterone if you're a woman. And I always have to say that I am no longer seeing patients in this way because my educational duties are keeping me so busy. And this is where Evolve Telemed comes in. I have been looking for a company that does bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and that is critically important. If you're going to be doing HRT or TRT, HRT being hormone replacement therapy for women, TRT being testosterone replacement therapy for men, if you are going to do these therapies, you want the bioidentical hormones. You want the hormones that your body makes naturally, that your body can recognize, that is no different from the hormones your body would make if you were making adequate levels. Bioidentical hormone replacement therapy does just this. And Evolve Telemed is a company that I am now using for my own testosterone replacement needs and have been super impressed with the way that they have structured their business model. And so I am now bringing this service to you through my partnership with Evolve Telemed. Essentially, the way this works is you go online, you make an appointment with Evolve. Evolve gets a doctor with you on a Zoom call. They go through your whole case. They go through your blood labs. They then prescribe your hormones directly to you, and you can get those hormones wherever you are. You do not have to go to a clinic near you. All you need is to have an internet access point, and you can meet with an expert in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and get those prescriptions. Now you can see why this is so powerful, can't you? Because this is something that so many of us need and can benefit from for our aging needs, our sexual health needs. These things have profound impact on mood, hair, skin, erections, libido, you name it. These things do everything for our metabolic health and vitality. So I am incredibly excited to bring Evolve Telemed to you. Now, the link that you go to is drjade.com/hormones. drjade.com/hormones. This will bring you to the Evolve Telemed portal. If you use the code NEXTLEVEL, you will get a discount on checkout for your first patient visit. I'm very excited to be able to bring this to you, and I hope you will use Evolve Telemed. I know you're going to find it extremely powerful to move your hormone needs over to them. Check them out, Evolve Telemed. Use the link drjade.com/hormones. drjade.com/hormones for Evolve Telemed. And let's get back to the show. And I like that you bring this up, because then this gets into, so here where we are in this discussion now, let's just go back. We're at this place where, okay, so we have these seed stories, things happen to us. We make it mean something. It influences our behavior, not just with those particular people, but with everybody, right? So I also have a story about growing up with my mom. She was incredibly loving, but she was emotionally volatile. And my story was, I never knew what I was going to get. And so my mom, being the first woman in my life, that translated over into I didn't trust women's emotional, ability to be emotionally stable. So that had consequences later. But one of the things you said that I think is really important here is like, okay, so what happens, Jade and London, if, you know, the person that I'm working with here really is an asshole? And how would I know? And I love that whole idea of if you have an issue, it's you. Because from my perspective, the only thing that only choice we have as humans is to take it on ourselves. If it's in our sphere of awareness and we want it changed, then it's up to us to make that change. Because if we're waiting for an apology or we're waiting for someone else to do it, it may never come. So we have to be the ones to do it. And for me, this is this idea of, okay, so once you do it, once you decide I'm going to change, then from my perspective, what begins to happen is other people will either change in response or they won't. And at that point in time, you either have a best friend, which in my case, my brother literally did become my best friend. I saw that the issue really was me. However, it could have been, and for many of you listening to this story, it could be that the issue actually is the other person. And here's how you will know. And tell me if this makes sense to you from my perspective, because I want to see if you have a different way of saying this. For me, if you have patterns that repeat, emotions that are recurrent, and obstacles that come up again and again, then you know it's you. For example, nowadays, if I ran into someone who I had a difficult time with, which I have, I don't have those issues anywhere else in my life. So if I run into somebody who I feel like I'm beating my head up against the wall and I don't have that pattern anywhere else, then I can be pretty sure it's them. However, if I look and say, well, this happens with my coworker. This happens with my brother. This happens with my wife or my husband. This happens with my sister. This happens with, you know, everyone. Then I know it's me. However, if it's just them, right, and it happens nowhere else, I don't have this emotional problem anywhere else but with this one person, then I can be pretty sure it's them. And at that point in time, I have made a change. And the only addition I would say we need, and I want to see how you deal with this, is that, okay, so now you've made this big change. Whoever else is not changing in response, now boundaries have to essentially come in where you essentially say, I refuse to engage with somebody who is not willing to meet me where I am trying to change. And that to me is the next step in this. So then it's like, I make the change, I take the responsibility, I'm the one who takes it on the chin, I'm the one that does the work, and then I see how my life responds in kind. And if it doesn't, and there's this one area, and that's what will happen, you'll know it'll work because everything will clean up except maybe one or two areas or one or two people. And then that's when the boundaries kick in. So how would you explain this way of spotting this? And then how do we begin to deal with it? Because some of these people and or situations we can't get rid of. Like maybe we can't quit our job. Maybe we can't move out of our home. Maybe we can't, you know, not see the mother or father of our children. Maybe we can't get rid of our mom or dad. So then how do we begin to deal with that?
Yeah, totally. Boundaries are super important. And I love the example that you gave where you're like, no, I can spot the knot. You know, I know enough of who I'm about and the reactions. I can spot the knot, you know, of what's not. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, you know, out of the ordinary for how my friends behave or how my normal relationships might be or my interactions. Like, you know, you might, for example, it might be the only one who, you know, gets pissed or freaks out when I don't like text you back or call. Maybe you have a needy friend or something like that, where you're just like, okay, you know, you're the only person that does this in my life. This is very clear. I need to like set some boundaries here. I think the more congruent we get with our core values, how we want to show up and things like that, the easier it gets, I think, to spot some of those patterns and set some of those boundaries.
Communication comes
well, yeah.
In, right?
And I think too, it's like, it's also situational, depends on who it is too, right? If it's someone that you're like, and this is sometimes where coaching and also discernment comes in, where it's like, do we need to have a conversation with the person? Is this just a person you just don't, you know, engage with anymore? Or I don't know, maybe it's like your nail stylist talks crap all the time and you're like, this is the only person around me that just talks crap incessantly about people. I'm going to go find a new nail salon. I don't need, maybe you could explain it to her and get, you know, a non-violently and communicate with her there. But, you know, maybe there's situations like that. But then like, what if it's, yeah, I don't know, your boss or just other situations where it's like boundaries have to be set differently, because even if, yeah, they're the only person that's showing up in your life in this avatar in this way and their seed stories contribute to it and whatever, you probably can't just like control all delete them. It's like, yeah, we have to deal and show up in that. And I think that's why nonviolent communication can be so helpful.
So let's say it's my sister then. Sorry, Jody, if you're listening to this, because me and Jody are Jody, who's my personal assistant, and my sister, we have no issues. But let's say it is my sister. And you know, how would I then set the boundaries and communicate with her in a nonviolent way?
Yeah. Okay.
Because this is important, right? Because if we approach this one way, we may, like if I approached it one way with my brother, maybe he does go, you know, screw Jade, he's just a dick. If I approach it another way, maybe he's on board. So how would we approach this? Like, what can you give us, like, one, two, or three? Are there principles of nonviolent communication where we can essentially say, here's our cheat code for having some of these conversations and putting up boundaries?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, let's talk about what nonviolent communication is. I'll quickly go through some of the four steps, and then I'll share a story about me dealing with family, and maybe that helps with family stuff. Yeah. Okay, so with nonviolent communication, there's kind of like four steps or four principles to go through when it comes to communicating nonviolently. And this is the work of Marshall Rosenberg. This was a book that I read that was recommended to me by my mentor, and I just loved it. I love the way that he was able to paint the picture of communicating nonviolently between families, like we're talking about, but then also between, you know, a lot of his work talks about ways that he was able to engage groups of people in nonviolent communication that were like maybe some of the biggest gangs and the police officers in big cities and things like this. So it was really cool for me to see the spectrum of ways that nonviolent communication was helping, from everyday living in our interpersonal relationships and things like that, to big picture, big issue stuff. So love the work of him. And so nonviolent communication. So four principles. The first one is observation over evaluation. So when we're communicating with somebody, it's very important that we communicate the observation, not like our interpretation of that. So an example would be like, you know, when you came home, you were super rude, versus like, hey, when you came home, you were really quiet. You went upstairs and you didn't say anything. What's up? You know, like not
so rather than making the assumption they were rude, just saying what.
Yes,
exactly,
because that's
happened.
More like criticizing, and the person's like, what? I wasn't being rude. I was fine. I actually was da da da. It's like it gives them more of like a, yeah, like the open-ended answer of like, well, what was that? Oh yeah, you're right. I did. I didn't even realize it. They might say, you know, I didn't realize it. I just like, or it could have been like, you know, I had to go pee so bad. I was driving and all I could think about was going to the bathroom. So I ran straight upstairs and I went to the bathroom and I wasn't being rude at all. Right. So understanding that when we want to communicate with someone, especially when we're setting boundaries or we want to communicate about something that might be just challenging, that we're not putting our own evaluation on it, our own model of the world on it. So the observation is number one.
That's a good one. That's a hard one, but that's a really important one. So just what happened, the facts, not our interpretation of the facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like, you know, you got so angry and upset, you know, it's like, well, I noticed your tonality of your voice changed. Like what happened there? Mm-hmm. How, you know, was it something, you know, was there a shift? Like just like being as basic as you can with observing what happened without putting our evaluations
so
on it.
So saying what you saw.
Yeah, exactly. Saying what you saw, exactly what happened. Because yeah, we can so put our own ingredients, our own sauce on it, our own toppings, and it can just be, it ends up just being like our own perspective again. We're not gaining anything. We're just like projecting. So the second one is feelings. So this one's important because it's like this happened and I felt, not like you were rude and you made me feel this way. So it's like this happened and I felt, and this is where I love words and communication, because I feel like at first I thought having more words for how I was feeling would be overwhelming, but I realized having more words for how I'm feeling is actually very empowering. So it's cool to be able to be like, okay, am I just angry, or am I frustrated or disheartened or confused, or, and just getting really in tune with how we're feeling so then we can accurately say that to someone. Like, I feel like, yeah, it's helpful to be able to put the point on exactly how we might be feeling. So then it's not like, I don't want to feel like, this is just, you know, me personally saying, like, I'm always angry. And for a while, I felt like there were a lot of feelings of anger that were coming up. But then I realized, like, okay, maybe this is a little frustration. Maybe this is a little resentment. Maybe this is a little sadness, you know, maybe I'm not, you know. So being able to kind of break that apart, I think, is super helpful. And I think the more that we can kind of understand it for ourselves, the better we can communicate it to others. And to know that our feelings are not, we're not at, like, at cause for them. Nobody made us feel any type of way. And I think that already is maybe a concept that is triggering, but I think it's already, or on top of that, even more, like, maybe you can understand, yeah, no one makes me feel this way, but it is so ingrained in our speech patterns in the English language. 100%. This made me feel that way. That made me feel like this. You made me feel that when you did that. It's like, what are we, Stretch Armstrong, where everyone gets to pull us in every different direction and make us play, you know, feel all types of ways. So I think that's really important, is just get, you know. And I think Nonviolent Communication by Rosenberg is a great book. Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown, great book. They literally have pages of words that describe how we feel. And I'm just going through and I'm like, oh yeah, that one time I thought I was a crazy basket case, just angry again. No, that was this feeling. And now I can see where that came from, and I can have a little bit more compassion and understanding for it. And I think too, like, if I'm coming at you, Jade, and I'm like, you did this and you made me mad. It's like, what, you know, it's like, hey, this happened. And I started to feel, you know, these, you know, feelings of, you know, rejection came up. And yeah, I just, you know, kind of explore the conversation instead of being like, you did this and you made me feel this way, period.
It's
kind of
like already, because it keeps people from being on the defensive. They don't have to go on the defensive. You're owning it. You're essentially saying, you didn't make me feel anything, but this happened and I felt, right? And so that, to me, keeps it someone from reacting, because I think inherently, I think we all know that if you feel a particular way, it's because you feel that way. And you're right, it can be triggering to someone, but I see it as a sign of maturity that people just go, I felt this way. No one can make me feel anything. You know, feelings are somewhat of a choice, but I like that aspect of it. So what's the third piece
then? Cool. So then the third one is our needs. So being able to communicate our needs for maybe like, hey, I felt, hey, when you didn't call, when you said that we were going to hang out, I felt a little bit sad because I want to spend time with you. So it's like a need for time spent or things like that. Being able to, yeah, communicate our, yeah, wanting to spend time with you, or even like, I have a need, yeah, maybe this works with a family member or just anyone. Like, I have a need to be on time. My kids get home at a certain time. So I'm feeling a little bit, you know, unheard or frustrated because, you know, I noticed that you're always coming in 15 minutes late. It's not like you're always late and inconsiderate and rude. It's just like, I noticed that this behavior is happening. This is how I feel. I have a need to be on time. I have a need to spend time with you. What's another a common need? I have a need for things to be kept tidy, right? Sometimes we want to make nonviolent requests for everyday things too.
And so that, being I like able that one, because that one's a fact then, right? Sorry to interrupt.
It's okay.
If you say, you were 15 minutes late, that's not saying you were rude. That's just saying you were 15 minutes late. So you can say that here.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then you
it's
say,
an observation.
And I felt this, and then I need this. I have a need to be on time. I have a need to get my kid. So that's the third part.
Yeah, that's the need. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth part, I think, is really important, is the request. Is the request not the demand? So the request, okay, based on my observation and the way that I felt and my need for XYZ, here's a request that I have. Now, this needs to be, this is not, and this is where we get to see that sometimes we can be completely unreasonable with our requests. So I think there's some parts to break down when it comes to the request, but it needs to be like low-hanging fruit. It needs to be like, hey, can you just send a text if next time you're going to be a little bit late? Or just something where it's like the person doesn't have to shift their whole entire day and their whole entire being of who they are in order to meet your request, right? So we need to be able to make a manageable request. And then depending on the person, right, sometimes we can like kind of negotiate the request of like, okay, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Maybe we can do more of this, depending on what the relationship might be, right? And then also being, I know you use the term like confidently detached in relationships, but like when we make the request, it kind of has to be like a detached request where it's like the person can be like, no, despite your observation and how you feel and your needs, nope, not doing that request. And we have to be okay with that too. So in this process of communication, it's not just being able to say how we feel, but also ask for what we might need, which can be totally tricky for a lot of people to just like ask for help, ask for what we might need, and then also be okay with what their response might be, right? And it's a request, not a demand. And how do you know? Because if someone is making a let's say it from the other end, like if you're making a request of me, or like I have a request for you and I say no and you lose your shit, like that was very clearly not a request. It was a demand, right? So even from our perspective too, it's like, okay, well, what if that person says no? And even for myself too, sometimes I notice myself coming from a place of demand. And that's why I like to sit and do a lot of introspection and what do you call it? Like visualization, because I'll ask myself, okay, well, if you make this request and this person says no, and I get that kinesthetic feeling that I get all fired up, then I can be like, okay, Lennon, are you sure you're not making a demand? Maybe you need to like let that simmer a little bit before you go in and make that request. So that way, should that person say no, you show up in a way that's also congruent with how you want to show up when someone also maybe rejects you or says no, or is just like,
yeah, I love this because this to me really smacks of extreme ownership, because it's basically like, own your feelings, own your needs, own your requests and your reaction. In other words, and to me, it's also a vetting strategy, right? Because if you do all this and communicate in this way, then you can be pretty sure this is another way to go. Is it me or is it them? Well, if I've not blamed them for my feelings and I've made a reasonable, you know, I've explained my needs and I've made a reasonable request and they refuse to participate, now I have lots and lots of information to be able to say, then I will now do this. It's fine for you to make your choice, but now I get to now make a choice whether I participate with you in the same way that I once did. I have an example of this with one of my older brothers. You know, Keone is one, not the one to tease me, but the other one, Kimo. I have great relations with both of them, but I have a boundary with Kimo where we just don't talk business with each other. Because from my perspective, and Kimo knows this, we've had this conversation, from my perspective, it never goes well. And some of the requests that I've made to him, I feel like are too difficult for him, or he's unwilling to really meet me there. And so I simply just go, my boundary is I'll have any conversations with the brother that I love, but I won't engage with talking about my business or his business or anything around that, because I've seen that it goes sideways. Now, I do leave open the possibility that it will change. And it has actually slowly changed with me and Kimo. But I think because I had the boundary is what actually was the thing that began the change. Had I never established that boundary or never communicated in, you know, I don't think I did it as well as these four stages, because I didn't know these four stages until now. But I think I did a fairly good job not understanding these four stages. And the boundary is what I think has repaired our relationship a little bit. And I think he established some of those boundaries with me as well. And so it's really interesting, because I think people want the relationships to change, but then they don't want to have these kinds of conversations or set up the boundaries to allow for the change. So they just want to, let's just keep doing the same thing and hope one of us changes. This to me is a better approach.
Yeah. And it can be like, this is the way that we do it and keep going, especially with family, especially with relationships that have been that way all the time. And I think that's such a beautiful way of being able to still have a relationship with a family member, but being like, hey, this topic is just off limits. Mm. It doesn't do either of us any justice. It's not empowering at all for us to talk about that. Like, let's just focus on what we do like to talk about and what we can, you know, grow with one another talking about and things like that. And maybe you didn't use these four steps, and I definitely, you know, have had many experiences communicating with family in so many ways that I am not proud of, in so many ways that I am proud of too, but in so many ways where you're just like, oh man, like this is really challenging. And, you know, all the triggers, all the repeat stories, all the things. And when I found nonviolent communication, and this is kind of the story I guess I'll share, because it's really family stuff. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit of a nerd or like a geek, but I learned something and I'm like, okay, I want to practice. Like, I want to put this out into real life. And I love the journey of getting to know more people who are in this nonviolent communication space, because oftentimes I say, like, you say that so much better than I, you know, because I'm there's a situation. Okay, so in my family, for example, like with me and my dad, we get along super well, but like for some reason, every single time, and this might be an exaggeration because it's probably not every time, but a lot of times, and I don't know why, and we've kind of observed this, and we just kind of like when we go on family vacations, and I know this is probably a time that probably many families can identify with, like shit hitting the fan and whatever, but there's always a blowout between me and my dad, like always. And it'll just be, you know, over the littlest thing, especially over plans and just doing things. And then sometimes it'll be over like things with the phone or maps or directions or just different things. And to your point of where you said, like, you're treating your brother like he's 9 and you guys are 12 and kids again, I just found myself like, oh my gosh, 33, definitely on repeat since I was 14, in the same loop of just like family vacations, getting in frustrating conversations, whatever. And so we went for my niece's birthday to go to this like water park, and I'm in the back seat of the car. We're in like the family car, my whole entire family, my niece, whatever. And I want to put the navigation on my mom's car because it has like the navigation space in the middle now. And yeah, very different. Like, they didn't have cars like that before. My mom, you know, they never had like the screen. It was just always like, just, yeah, the cars now are different. So I was like, yeah, let's just plug in the thing. I'll put the maps on. It'll be good to go, you know? And my dad's just like frustrated. He doesn't want to use that because he doesn't know how to use that. And of course my evaluations are going, you never want to learn anything new. You always are. I'm like, observations, London, observations. So I'm sitting in the back seat and I'm like, I'm noticing that we're having issues like getting home, and this process is super easy of putting the navigation in the front, and I'm feeling very overwhelmed because I have a need of being able to be on family trips and be able to have them go smoothly. So I have a request. Can I put the navigation on the screen so that way we don't have to worry about who's playing navigator and who's not? And what response did I get? No. Rejection. Turned down. Couldn't even use the navigation, right? So I'm sitting there in the back seat laughing, just thinking like, this is real shit, you know? Like, this is like the stuff, you know, that it just is like challenging because you're like, dude, it's common denominator. I could have. And even my niece got it. She's 4 and she's sitting next to me. She's like, if you don't stop, then grandpa's not going to stop, because we're going back and forth, just like back and forth, you know? And it's just like noticing these patterns, having fun with it, laughing with it. And then also I just look forward to getting better of being able to, and this is why it's like fun and it's play, and it's, I see it so empowering, because it's like, yeah, I want to get better at communicating my observations and my needs and my feelings and my requests in a way that feels less rehearsed, kind of. But when I'm practicing being who I want to be, it does require a little bit of kind of rehearsal there, where it's like, okay, normally this is how I would react with my dad. This is the autopilot, but I'm going to rehearse being different and try to get a different outcome. Did I get my way? No. But was I proud of how I showed up? Yes. Because I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because normally I'm not that way, you know?
This is a really beautiful thing, because from my perspective, you know, we've all heard that idea, people are practice. Well, maybe some people haven't, but people are practice is something I oftentimes repeat to myself. And one of the things that I decided, again, around my mid-20s, when I started to, you know, see some of my patterns and take responsibility for all the patterns in my family that I wanted changed, I was just like, I'm going to take responsibility for that. And one of the things that I just began to do is to approach things a lot like, you know, you're saying, I started to just say, I'm going to communicate this and that. And if people aren't willing, then I will do what I need by setting boundaries. And one of the things that happened was, I think most people, they just decide, I'm not going to deal with it. So I'm just going to shut down. I won't have any discussions, especially with family. And what I found is that other family members who did that, I had tend to get along very well with people, have very deep relationships, have very honest relationships now. I went through this again with my wife, who I had, many of you know my story, so I won't rehash that. But to me, every time I found something in my life that I needed to take responsibility for, I just said, people are practice, and I'm going to practice. I'm going to have the difficult conversations, and I'm going to figure this out. And I am better for it. And it always sort of is interesting to me that the natural default for a lot of us, and for me for a long time, so no judgment here, is to just stop talking. And that assures the patterns hang around. One of the things about my family, we're a big Italian-American family, yell and scream at each other. And I've seen other families, they go, how are you guys so close? And I think it's literally because we yelled and screamed. Now, we yell and scream less. We still communicate, though. But I think as long as, even if you're yelling and screaming and you're communicating, that's better than not communicating. And I do think it's useful to consider that people are practice and we need the practice.
Yep. And I would share one other thing, because I think, I mean, I guess family can write each other off. You know, like my dad could have been like, you told me about the navigation, you're out. We're done, right? Mm-hmm. Or your brother could have been like, you know, you're crazy for thinking I'm bullying you, or da da da, we're out, right? It's not the case for everybody, but I feel fortunate enough to, even in that space of being able to practice around my family in that space, it's really hard. But I also knew that despite his answer, you know, yes or no, of that small little instance, like we were still good, you know. But I had a recent conversation with a close friend of mine that's been my friend for a really long time. That was one of those situations where we said, you can spot the knot. And it was less a matter of like, you know, is this conversation going to end as the way it did when I was 16 with my dad or not? And this was really more like, I had a boundary to set. I had something to communicate that was really important. And I had shared this with you. And we had talked about like, how can I do this in the best, most congruent way with who I want to be and how I want to show up. And in the end, when making this request, and granted, her and I had a long conversation. It wasn't so robotic as it was in the backseat with my family. But I really try to use a lot of these techniques and share much more observations and evaluations and use a lot of words to communicate my feelings and needs and make a request. And the outcome of that request could have resulted in her being like, no, I don't want to be, I'm not going to, you know, I don't see where you're coming from. And, you know, we can't be friends anymore. I don't see the value in our relationship. She could have been really hurt by something that happened that was in the situation. And I remember getting off the phone with her and I was on a walk outside and I remember being like, okay, like this person who you've been friends with for 15 years, like the relationship that you know and love or knew and love despite what you needed to set boundaries on could be like over as you know it. And I remember telling myself like, okay, it's either going to be better because of this conversation. And also if it doesn't work out, like I'm proud of what I said. It was congruent with who I am. And so I share that because it's like some of them can be as funny as everyday conversations and funny stuff with our family and things like that. And it can be like the real deep stuff of like, as you're showing up who you want to be and there's somebody else in your life where you're like, hey, like this is really like boundary time. Like I want to, you know, and there can be moments where, yeah, she could have said yes or no. She could have been out. And there can be moments where I think it's a sieve. It's challenging, but it's like communicating, showing up how we want to be can sometimes just let things that need to go, people, relationships, situations go. And sometimes that can be scary too, right? Because it's like if we say how we really feel and what our real needs are and we make this request, they really can be out. And they can really be out too, like, out, right? Not in the way that my dad was out on the navigation, but they could be like out of my life for good or for a significant period of time. Or maybe she doesn't want to talk for some years or needs time to cool off, whatever. And that for me is like, that's, I think that's worth mentioning too, because there are moments when, you know, we're changing some of the seed stories that we talked about, we're having new realizations, we realize fitness isn't everything, mindset stuff, we want to become more of who we want to become. And then it's like, we have to show up sometimes people would say to, like, when you ask for more patience, you don't just get more patience, you get more opportunity to be patient. So 100%. I think as I'm practicing nonviolent communication, I feel like I'm getting so many opportunities to practice nonviolent communication with my family, with my friends, with people I work with you, mm-hmm. right? Like just being able to like present observations, feelings, needs, and requests in a good and in a fluent, you know, respectful way.
I actually think that's the perfect place to end, because I think very clearly, I'm very clear on this. And what I'm going to say is going to be really hard for some people, but this is just a fact of life. And every single one of us listening and involved in this conversation right now are going to know this is a fact of life as soon as I say it. First thing is, imagine the energy that is freed up if that relationship does dissolve. And you have to see it that way. You have to go, this may dissolve and I will have more energy to do what I want to do in my life. And the second thing I'll say, and here's the truism here, you cannot have the life that you want, the different life that you want, by holding on to the same you in the past. You just simply can't. And from my perspective, it is not just a possibility, but oftentimes a necessity to allow those relationships to be jettisoned. And I would say that too many people are so terrified of relationships ending or taking on a different form that they will voluntarily keep themselves stuck. And this is something that, and I hate to say it, and I don't mean it in an uncompassionate way, but this is you voluntarily keeping yourself stuck so that you can have a relationship that isn't even serving you. It's just craziness when you really think about it. So to me, I oftentimes say there's two courages we need in life: the courage to be disliked and the courage to be rejected, or the courage to reject. And if we don't have those, we can't be the new thing that we want. And that would be my final thoughts here. So give me your final thoughts, and then make sure, I want everyone to know where they can find you and listen to your podcast and your social media and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
I think my final thoughts are just short. Just to say that, you know, communication and mindset and showing up in those arenas and in those gyms for the repetitions in those areas is so much, I'd say, just as important, if not more important, than the reps we might be putting in the gym or the reps we might be putting in thinking about our workout and our meal plans and our this and our that. If anyone listening is just that, you know, the one thing they take away is like, okay, I'm going to work in a little bit more than I'm focusing on the workout, like, I would be super happy on that point. I'm everywhere at Life Like London on social media, everywhere. You guys can connect with me there.
And so at Life Like London on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, on what else?
All the places.
So all the places at Life Like London. And London has a really amazing podcast. Tell me about your podcast.
Yeah, thanks. The podcast is called Self Love and Sweat, the podcast. Mm-hmm. Available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's me by myself. Sometimes it's conversations. Hearing stories from people, empowering to live your life unapologetically, embrace where you are in life, and just like continue to show up doing what sets your soul on fire.
London, you're amazing and brilliant and beautiful and badass. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Thank you.